Eleanor gave the other woman one quick, fierce look. If I leave him, he will die. I can't believe he's not dead as it is, Marnie said, her voice compassionate. I don't want to lie to you. I think every breath will be his last. Eleanor nodded. I know. He should be dead. But he's not, and I won't let him die. That's why I have to be the one to stay with him. You think you're some kind of mystic who can heal a man with her touch? Yes, Eleanor said slowly. That's exactly what I think I am. A startled little silence for that. Marnie was clearly remembering that Eleanor had arrived at her house wearing the white robes of a novice from the convent, not the place you would expect to find a mystic. She obviously decided not to ask, for she came to her feet and said, Let me know if there's anything you want.
There is, Eleanor said. I need food, lots of it, milk and meat and bread and potatoes, cheese, more than you'd think one person could eat. I'll go through it all. Blankets, and enough fuel to keep the fire going all day.
All right, Marnie said and turned for the door. She paused with a hand on the knob. You really think you can save him? Eleanor was pulling her legs up onto the bed and stretching them out alongside Justin. She arranged her borrowed skirts so they did not bunch around her knees.
I know I can, she said.
Chapter 30. For the next 5 days, Eleanor stayed beside Justin and gave him her life. Whether she was lying beside him half asleep, or whether she sat next to him, feeding herself from the banquet that Marnie supplied, she kept one hand always on his chest. He became an extension of her, a limb, an appendage. Her heartbeat drove his pulse, her lungs pushed air into and out of his body. If he were to open his eyes, he would see only what she saw. If he dreamed at all, it was only what she was dreaming. They were a single creature, animated by a single will, with such simple needs. Eat, breathe, maintain a certain rhythm in the blood. Those first few days, Eleanor was ravenous. Marnie brought enough food to feed 3 men, and Eleanor consumed it all. Marnie brought more. Even so, Eleanor could feel herself burning quickly through all the fuel she supplied her body. There was so much need for warmth. Justin had lost a great deal of blood. He could not, on his own, generate enough heat to sustain his life. So Eleanor fed him her own heat, poured the life and energy from her body into his. She could feel the difference in temperature between his skin and hers, for her fingers lay like slender icicles on his warm chest. She wrapped herself in 2 quilts, in 3. She requested that Marnie build up the fire even more, but she did not pull away from Justin. She did not conserve her strength. She flattened her hand with more pressure on his ribs, and she felt him steal away her energy, and she was glad. Look at him, face all rosy, Marnie murmured the afternoon of the 3rd day. He was so pale when you brought him in, too. I thought there was no way he... But there. You're looking awfully peaked, Eleanor. I wish you'd let me sit with him for a while. Eleanor just shook her head. She knew that she was the only thing keeping Justin alive. In the middle of the night, after the 3rd day, she felt the infection begin to build in his body. She woke, suddenly too hot, in her cocoon of blankets, to find that Justin's skin against her palm was warming of its own accord. So far, the fever was minor, but she needed to pay attention. She needed to change her strategy. She pulled the blankets off, one by one, and pushed them down to her feet or over the side of the bed to the floor. Then she turned on her side and snuggled back against Justin, testing the temperature of his body with her own. She remained awake the rest of that long night, watchful and afraid to sleep. Sure enough, toward dawn his fever suddenly spiked. Heat lanced through his bones.
Eleanor shifted her hold, lay the whole length of her arm across his chest, hiked up the edge of her dress so that her bare leg pressed against his, flesh to flesh. Then she used herself as a wick to draw the fever from his body into hers. For the next day and a half, his temperature raged dangerously high, but it never had a chance to harm him. Eleanor absorbed every extra degree. Her skin felt like it was burning. Her mind grew jagged and incoherent. But she would not let go of Justin. She would not pull back. Marnie came by almost every hour, worried and fussing, and Eleanor let the older woman do what nursing she would. She was sure Marnie dusted Justin's infected wounds with some kind of herbal mix. She knew that several times a day, Marnie washed the faces and shoulders of both patients with cool water. Eleanor tried to drink when Marnie held a glass to her mouth, but she had no interest in food. It would only make her hotter. Now and then, she caught snatches of whispered conversations, Marnie and Faber, perhaps, though she wasn't sure and didn't much care.
"He's still alive, though. Never would have thought that."
"Yes, but I think she's in danger now. Can't explain how. Body is hot, but he's the one who was infected."
"Some kind of mystic."
"But that's... mustn't have guessed at the convent."
"You think she could die?"
"I can't convince her to leave him. I'm afraid if I force her..."
"Don't want him to die, either."
"Nothing to do but let her be." Eleanor rested her hot cheek against Justin's shoulder and let her eyelids close, glad when the voices faded and the door shut again. A moment's tension had tightened her muscles, forced her eyes open, when she understood enough of the conversation to realize that her hosts were debating separating her from Justin. But no one had disturbed her. She decided hazily that no one would. Nothing to do but let her be. She was so tired. Time to sleep again. The fever broke about noon on the fifth day. Eleanor, drowsing beside Justin in the bed, felt it as a distinct sensation beneath her hand. One moment, a spiraling crescendo of heat coiling from his body directly into hers. The next, a film of sweat against her palm, a sudden shutdown of that overworked furnace. She lifted her head, though it made her senses swim, and tried to determine if this was good news or bad. Had Justin's body finally given out, succumbed, lost all power to fight? Did the drop in body temperature signal an even more dangerous stage? But no. No. She could see the color in his face, paler than it should be, but reassuringly normal. His breathing was even, and for the first time in days, completely untroubled. He shifted against her, something he had rarely done while they lay embraced, as if trying to get comfortable, as if trying to wake up. She watched his face eagerly, hoping his eyes would open, hoping he would try to talk, but he was not that far recovered. He gave a small sound like a sigh, like a whisper of contentment, and fell asleep. Eleanor realized that Justin's body was finally beginning to mend itself. It was as if she could feel the skeins of veins, the masses of muscle, shaking themselves free of lethargy and beginning to take stock. Wound here, bruise over there, hard pressure on the lung, knit this up, disperse this clot, cool down. It was as if, beneath the stolid surface of the skin, a great invisible activity was underway. Justin was busy healing. That was her cue to raise her hand, push herself away from him, set herself free. He would be like a ravening predator now. He would snatch up any source of nourishment, hold soup or water to his mouth and he would gulp it down, fan air in his direction and he would suck it into his lungs. All this time, she had forced her own energy into his body, but he was strong enough now to steal it for himself. And he would. He already was. She could feel the greedy pull of his wakened desire for life. Her fingers tingled, as if blood was trickling from the tips. The sensation traveled through her palms, across her wrists, up toward her elbows, in the direction of her heart. She could not pull away. Exhausted, she lay back against him, her head on his pillow, her arms still draped across his chest. Let him have it all, then. She would gladly give him her life. It was what she owed the goddess anyway, for keeping Justin alive. She leaned forward just enough to kiss his cheek and fell asleep with her head against his shoulder. 2 hours later, Eleanor was wakened by commotion in the hall. She was too tired to lift her head, but she listened as closely as her dreamy state would allow. Voices, shouting, heavy footsteps on the stairs, names she didn't recognize, nothing to do with her. The door burst backward, and two women strode into the room. Eleanor didn't have the strength to sit up or even feel astonished. She just slitted her eyes open and watched them march purposefully to the bed. One was tall and severe. She wore men's clothing and styled her white blonde hair very short. The other was smaller, golden, and beautiful, dressed in flowing blue. It was the golden woman who came close enough to lean over the bed, laying one hand on Eleanor's cheek and one on Justin's. She gave a small exclamation of dismay. "Wild mother, watch me. She's completely drained. Another hour or two and I believe she'd be dead. What about Justin? I'd need to do a more thorough exam, but from just a quick look I'd say he's mending. I can't feel a fever in him, at any rate. Cammon said he was out of danger." "Well, Cammon didn't say anything about this one. Look at her, Sen. Look at the way she's lying here. It's like she's transfusing him with her blood. Except there's no blood." A momentary silence. "Yes, that's a Liren trick," the white-haired woman said softly. "She must be one of Mara's healers." "What? Never mind. What do we do now? If Justin's well enough, I think we'd better separate them. I can stay with Justin, but Seneth, I think she's in even worse shape than he is at the moment. Can you?" The other woman had a laugh in her voice, though nothing she said sounded funny to Eleanor. "Oh, I think I can. I don't think she'll enjoy it much, though. Let's get her into her own room first. Has Taze calmed our hostess? I give her credit for trying to protect her patients most ferociously. I think she sent for her husband. I would guess that very soon Taze will be pulling out his lions to reassure everyone." Which, Eleanor thought mistily, made no sense at all. Lions? In a house? Who were these people? They knew Justin, though, that much seemed plain. Knew him and cared about him. Some of the burden was to be lifted from her. Good. She was so tired. She could not carry it all by herself any longer. The golden-haired woman was leaning over Eleanor now, very gently disentangling her fingers from their clutch on Justin's shirt. "Time to let go, I think," she said in a soothing voice. "You've done a most excellent job, but I'm a healer, too. I can take care of him now. You've kept him alive. Let someone else do some of the work. Let go. That's right." It felt so strange to release him, so odd to take a shallow breath, because she was only breathing for one. Her heart pattered too hard for a moment, not used to the easier task of driving only a single pulse. Her body felt light as one of those discarded quilts. She might float up from the bed, disembodied as air. She could feel her hair spread out on the pillow, unwinding from the braid she'd made 5 days ago. It would dangle behind her as she drifted up toward the ceiling and out the open window. "Sen, help her!" Ridiculous. She didn't need help to float away. She tried to say so, as the tall woman sat next to her on the bed, gathering Eleanor's hands in one of hers, laying her other hand right over Eleanor's heart. The golden girl moved away, circled around the bed to appear on Justin's other side. The woman with white blonde hair bent over Eleanor, trying to catch her wandering attention. Her eyes were a strange color, ashy gray, serious. "This might feel uncomfortable," she said, and tightened her hold. Fire arced through Eleanor's body in great rolling balls. She gasped and tried to scream, but her throat was raw. Her voice burned away. Another shock of fire. Another. She felt every artery, every hidden estuary of vein, run with an individual flame. The hair on her skin crackled and stood on end. Her whole body flushed with heat. She had been languid before, exhausted, sucked clean. Now she was charged with adrenaline, a living conflagration.
Stop that!
She gasped, and both of the women laughed. My name's Seneth. That's Kira. We're friends of Justin's, the white-haired woman said. Oh, and by the way, we're mystics. Mystics. Kira. Eleanor remembered that name. Her momentary stab of jealousy was replaced by a sense of profound relief that rolled over her like cooling water, extinguishing Seneth's sprays of flame.
Can you save Justin? She whispered.
You've already saved him, said the one called Kira. Justin had said she was beautiful, but Eleanor hadn't envisioned anyone quite so attractive.
You're the one I'm worried about now.
It doesn't matter about me, Eleanor said.
She was feeling remarkably alive after those jolts of power from the mystic's hands, but she was still exhausted. She wanted to sit up, exclaim, check on Justin, get a better look at Kira's face, but she couldn't. She wanted to close her eyes and sleep for a week.
Oh, I'm guessing Justin believes it matters very much about you, Seneth said.
Stay here a moment. I'm going to see if I can find the room our hostess has set aside for you.
I don't want a room, Eleanor said drowsily. I don't want to leave Justin.
He'll be here when you wake up, Seneth said. I can't imagine, after all this, he'd leave you behind. Chapter 31 It was nighttime when Justin woke, opening his eyes to a sudden and complete sense of consciousness. Nighttime, in a place he did not recognize. And great burning mother, he felt like 15 different kinds of hell. It was instinct to attempt to piece together where he was and what had happened. All the while, lying so still, no one in the vicinity would realize he was awake. Softness below him. He was in a bed. Shapes arranged like doors and windows against the denser materials of walls. He was in a good-sized room. No shackles on his wrists. He was among friends. So, he was a guest in someone's house, and he must have come to rest here after the battle to end all battles, because he certainly recognized the feel of a sword wound, and holy mother, there were dozens on his chest and arms. And just like that, he remembered the fight in the forest, the Lestra's men, taking a blade through the ribs just as he lunged to cut the other man's throat. He had fallen to the ground, knowing his wounds were most likely fatal, bitterly cursing himself for having failed Eleanor, who would come down this track in 5 days and find him missing. That he still lived could only be attributable to magic. He squeezed his eyes shut, trying to remember anything that had happened since that fight in the forest. He had the sense that a good deal of time had passed. Days, he hoped, instead of weeks. But he had only the most confused impressions of movement, voices, touch. A hand on his shoulder, a hand over his heart. That much he remembered. Whose hand? Eleanor's? How long had she tended him? Was she still here? Where was he? Still not moving his head, he sent his gaze around the room. This wasn't his rented place in the boarding house, that much he was sure of, and he didn't think it was the interior of the convent, which Taze had described as far more stark and severe. Had someone found his fallen body on the road and brought him back to safety? Was he in Neft? Was somebody caring for him? There was a chair next to the bed. He narrowed his gaze and strained to see. Yes, someone was sitting in the chair, a woman. It was impossible to see her clearly in the darkness, but he could make out a long tumble of hair, a silky sheen where her pale skirts were gathered around her knees.
"Eleanor,"
he whispered, not daring to believe. He struggled to sit up.
Damn, that was painful,
and succeeded in pushing himself onto his elbows.
"Eleanor?"
The woman stirred and straightened, then leaned forward in her chair. He could tell before she spoke that she wasn't Eleanor, and a great blow of disappointment landed in his stomach. "You're awake," the woman exclaimed, and most of his disappointment evaporated.
"Kira? What are you doing here?"
She bounced out of the chair and perched beside him on the bed, running her cool hands lightly over his face and shoulders. "Long story. Give me a minute. How do you feel? How's your breathing?"
"Hurt all over. Weak. Breathing's fine, though. Why, did I get a sword through my lung?"
"Nicked the edge of it, from what I can tell. Though really, you had so many wounds, I haven't had time to catalog them all."
"What happened to me?"
She reached over to light a candle on the bedside table, then folded her hands in her lap and looked down at him. The single flame ran a loving glow down her golden hair, painted a saintly expression on her beautiful face. "What do you remember?"
"Fight against some convent guards in the woods. I think I killed them all, but some of them were pretty good. From what I remember of the last couple of blows, I could have died."
"Should have died," she said. "I've never seen anyone live when they had wounds like yours." He was silent a moment, for that was a strange thing, to be told you had knocked on the door of death.
"How did you find me in time?" he said. "I had no idea you were anywhere near Neft."
She was smiling now, so much for the pious expression. This look was pure Kira. "But I wasn't," she said in a dulcet voice. "I'm not the one who saved your life." He felt an emotion knock through him, hope or apprehension or something he couldn't identify.
"Who did? What happened?"
"We're still piecing it together, and it's not entirely credible, but apparently the young woman you've grown so fond of..."
"Eleanor?" he said sharply. "She's mixed up in this?"
Kira nodded. "Oh, yes. Apparently she found you on the trail, surrounded by corpses, and as close to death yourself as makes no difference. And she... I don't know what she did. She put a spell on you or something, and then came racing into town to find the man who lives here. Faber? Is that his name?"
That made sense. So he was in Faber's house. "I'd told her she could trust him if she ever needed help."
"So he got a wagon and drove out to pick you up, and they carried you back here, where everyone expected you to expire at any minute, but you didn't die. Not from blood loss, not from infection, not from anything." She waited, watching him expectantly.
"Why didn't I die?"
he asked, since she was obviously waiting for the question. "I have no idea. Marnie, Faber's wife, says Eleanor wouldn't leave your side. Lay beside you on this bed for 5 days, her hand always touching you, like she was feeding you with her own strength. I don't know how else to explain it. When I got here, Eleanor herself was practically a wraith, like she'd given up every ounce of energy in her body, given it to you." He felt a sudden surge of fear that made him fight to sit up again. This time, he succeeded.
"Where is she? Is she all right? I wouldn't... If something happens to her because of me,
Well, I think it was a pretty near-run thing, Kira admitted. I think, as close to death as you had been at first, that's how close she was by the end. It was like she traded everything with you, gave you her health while she took on your weakness. I can't imagine how she did that. I want to learn, though. Who cared about Mystic's tricks?
But is she all right? He said impatiently. Where is she? Can I see her?
She leaned close enough to push him in the chest, and he collapsed back on the pillows. She's sleeping. Seneth's with her, and you know Seneth can keep anybody alive. That news made a small, bright ball of happiness inside him.
Seneth's here?
Oh, we're all here. Tays, Cammon, Donnell, all of us.
Really? Why? For me? How'd you know I was hurt?
She watched him a moment, grinning. I'm just going to let you figure that out on your own. It wasn't hard.
Cammon?
Cammon, indeed. Clutches a hand to his heart, shrieks Justin, and falls to the ground most dramatically. Got our attention, I assure you. We were a couple days outside of Gosen Hall, but we altered course and came flying down here so fast I feel like I must have left a hand or a foot behind on the road. At least a couple of pairs of shoes.
When did you get here?
This afternoon.
So it's been about 5 full days since I've been hurt, and I've done nothing but lie here this whole time?
Lie there and heal, she corrected.
I need to get up.
He lifted a hand and made a fist. No strength in his fingers. How long would it take before he'd be able to heft a sword?
I'm so weak.
You will be for a while, I'd think, she agreed. I can help you along a little, but your body will have to do some of the work itself. He pushed the covers back. He was wearing some kind of long nightshirt, certainly not his own. Faber's, maybe. Beneath it, his legs looked spindly and wasted. Bright mother of the burning skies, his whole body flexed with pain when he swung his legs to the side of the bed and paused there, gathering his strength. Kira was watching closely. You might want to wait till Taze is around. He can help you up.
Don't need Taze's help to walk across the room, he said with a grunt.
Well, if you fall over, I can't lift you.
Guessing Donald's right outside the room, he said, but I'm not going to fall over.
She shrugged and stopped arguing. Kira was never much of one for urging caution. She did come to her feet, though, ready to help him if she could. Justin braced his heels on the floor and then heaved himself up, feeling the shrieking protest of every half-healed wound. But he stood steady once he got over the initial dizziness. As soon as he had readjusted to the sense of his own weight, he took a few careful steps, hands outstretched to grab at furniture if he needed to. But he felt stronger with each step, more sure of himself. He crossed to the wall and rested a moment before beginning the short journey back. Just as he reached the bedpost, the door pushed open a few inches and a large black dog nosed in. He's up, Kira said to the dog, who came all the way into the room and flowed into the shape of Donnell. The mystic was smiling through his beard.
Thought I heard voices, Donnell said. How are you feeling?
Lucky.
Donnell nodded. That seems to be the general opinion.
And sore as hell.
He paced slowly back toward the wall. It did not escape his attention that Donnell remained by the door, Kira by the bed, both of them close enough to catch him if he fell. So, tell us about these people whose house we're in, Kira said. They've been exceedingly gracious, but I can't think they're delighted to have so much company all at once and so many of them at death's door. Justin grinned as he shuffled back toward her.
He's magistrate of the town, runs the civil guard, settles disputes. He made a point of getting to know me. I think he probably makes a point of getting to know any drifters who start to hang around. Did you tell him who you were?
Donnell asked. He shook his head.
No, but I know he thought I was here for some purpose.
and we had a couple of guarded conversations about the daughters of the Pale Mother that led me to believe he didn't agree with Alestra's persecution of mystics. Kira laughed. Gods, let's hope not, with four of them in the house. She glanced at Donald. Five, I suppose, including Eleanor. I had the feeling I could trust him, but... He shrugged. I suppose you don't ever know for certain till you put your trust to the test.
Kamen likes him, Donald said, grinning. So Taze told him the truth. About all of you being mystics?
I think he figured that out on his own, Kira said dryly. About the two of you being riders. Justin had paused with a hand on the bedpost. He was panting a little, but he was far from done with this simple exercise. By the stillness outside, he guessed it had to be an hour or two past midnight. An odd time for either rehabilitation or conversation, but Kira and Donald were both perfectly at ease. The shiftlings never seemed to adhere to ordinary rules for behavior.
And how did Faber take the news? He wanted to know.
Said, that explains a lot, Donald replied. I think he was referring to the five men dead on the road. That seems to be the thing that has impressed him the most. He kept saying, I didn't see how that could be possible.
They came at us without a warning, Justin said.
Once again, he was headed toward Donald.
Didn't give us a chance to talk or argue. Jenkins, the man with me, didn't even have a weapon on him. They just slaughtered him. So I didn't hold back. I went for the killing blows. I knew they would cut me down if they got the chance.
He touched the wall and glanced over at Donald.
Any news in town about the dead soldiers? Anyone come looking?
Taze got the story from Faber, but I haven't heard all the details, Donald said. Apparently, convent guards did come to the city asking questions, but either there wasn't a house-to-house search or nobody thought to check Faber's place. There was some talk that the reason your body hadn't been found was that it had been dragged off into the forest and eaten. Apparently predators had gotten a start on the others. And you got lucky again. Rained the day after your fight. A lot of tracks left on the forest trail, but none on the main road into Neft. No one could follow the wagon to this house, even if they suspected a wagon had come for you.
Justin grunted.
More magic from Eleanor's goddess, maybe.
Who would that goddess be, do you know? Kira asked.
The Dark Watcher, so she says.
He saw Kira exchange a troubled glance with Donald, but he didn't know how to read it. All she said was, So how does she feel about the Pale Mother? He hadn't tried to make the trek back toward the bed yet. He just stood against the wall, resting.
She seems fond of the Silver Lady. I don't pretend to understand it. That's the goddess who seems to incite so much hatred, and Eleanor is not good at hate.
Well, we'll have to ask her more when she's awake, Kira said. Justin nodded, took a breath, and headed for the door. Where are you going? Kira asked, alarmed. She was instantly beside him. Donald had moved over just enough to block Justin's exit.
I want to see her.
I told you she's sleeping. She's with Seneth. You can see her in the morning.
I want to see her now. I just want to be sure.
He turned to give Kira a look of open entreaty. There wasn't much light in the room, but enough for her to see the expression on his face.
You'd do it. You wouldn't let anyone keep you out of the room.
Justin, you can hardly stay on your feet, she exclaimed. But Donald stepped aside. Justin gave him a nod of thanks and opened the door. The hallway was dark, and he didn't know this house, but he could see a stairway to his right and doors lined up down the hall to his left.
The room next to yours, Donald said, following him out and standing just a pace behind.
Justin ran one hand along the rough surface of the wall to help him keep his balance, but made it without trouble to the designated door. A soft knock, just to alert anyone who might be awake, and then he pushed the door open and went in. A bed, a chair, a single candle, dark shadows of smaller furniture against the walls. Whoever was in the chair quickly stood up as Justin entered, but the shape under the covers on the bed did not move. Eleanor. Eleanor lying there, her dark, patterned hair spread out over the white pillows, her delicate face pale, even by insufficient light, her eyelids closed, her hands lax on the quilt, not appearing to move at all. He had taken 3 steps toward the bed before he realized it was Seneth who had risen from the chair and intercepted him in the middle of the room. "Justin," she whispered, "what are you doing up?" She caught him by both arms and held him in place. He felt the heat from her hands burn through the thin cotton of his nightshirt. She was about as tall as he was, and at the moment stronger. He could not push past her.
"I wanted to see her," he replied.
He craned his neck to see past Seneth's shoulder. The blankets rose and fell in a slight but rhythmic pattern. A strangled laugh from Seneth, and then she shook him, hard enough to make his head wobble. "I'm so glad you're awake and coherent, but Justin, you need to lie back down. I'll take care of Eleanor. She'll be fine. You can visit her in the morning." "Has she woken up yet? Said anything?" Kira asked from behind him, and he realized she had followed him into the room. "Twice, just long enough to eat something and ask after Justin." She smiled at him, and he could see beneath her concern a genuine delight that he was recovered enough to be up and strolling around. "I told her he was growing stronger with every passing hour. It calmed her enough to let her go back to sleep."
"She'll be all right, though. She won't die."
Seneth's hands tightened on his arms with enough pressure to force his attention back to her face. Her expression was serious. She was clearly willing him to believe.
"No, Justin. She won't die. I'm here. I'll take care of her. You have to trust me."
"I do trust you," he said, his voice almost a whisper. "But Seneth, Eleanor, she doesn't know you. I don't want her to be afraid."
Seneth put one warm hand up to his cheek and smiled at him tenderly.
"She's not afraid, Justin. When she heard you were going to live, I think her last fear disappeared. Now you go on. Go back to bed and sleep. You want to be well enough to come see her in the morning."
"Will she be awake then? Will she be feeling better?"
Seneth smiled. "She'll probably be stronger than you."
"Is that a challenge?" Kira inquired. "Is that an insult to my magic? Come here, gutter boy. Let me see if I can get you returned to a state of glowing health by morning."
Seneth dropped her hands but gave him a little push toward the door.
"Go. Let Kira do her work. Get some sleep. I'll watch over Eleanor till morning."
Chapter 32. The next day, Justin woke feeling sore, ravenous, and edgy. He threw back the covers and came to his feet before he'd even glanced over to see if Kira was still in the chair guarding him. No, it was empty. A good sign, he thought. She didn't think he was weak enough to require constant scrutiny. He balled his hands up and bounced on his feet, feeling exponentially better than he had the night before. She must indeed have poured more magic into his veins while he slept. He knew enough about sword wounds to know they did not improve this rapidly on their own. Still, he was far from whole. His muscles responded slowly when he mimed a quick grab at an imaginary weapon. Even cautious steps across the room woke pain in his chest, his shoulders, his legs. Not unendurable pain, though. He lengthened his stride, punching at the air as he walked. He would not be up to fighting strength for weeks. Days, maybe, if Kira continued to heal him. The door opened quietly, and Kamen's head appeared. He smiled broadly when he saw Justin was up and came all the way inside.
"You look much better.
How do you feel?
Not so good now, but like I'll mend pretty well, Justin said.
He crossed over to clout Kamen affectionately on the shoulder.
How can you do tricks like that? Feel me get sliced by a sword from a couple hundred miles away. How can anybody do that?
Kamen shrugged.
I just can. Lucky for you.
Justin grinned.
No end of luck this trip out, it seems.
Are you hungry? I brought you food.
Starving. Bring it right in.
They sat at a small table and ate from the same platter, though Kamen let Justin consume most of the items on the tray. Justin was only halfway through when other visitors started arriving. Taze was the first to step through the door, moving silently on his big feet and coming to stand beside them. Even through his slight smile, the rider's dark face looked deeply serious.
"It would have been a grievous day if we had lost you," Taze said. "The king and all the riders would have mourned."
Justin swallowed and pushed aside his tray. He came to his feet with much less effort this time.
"I almost managed it," he said. "Five was too many."
"You did manage it," Taze said. "You survived, and they did not."
"Well, he survived because someone helped him,"
Kamen pointed out. Taze turned that sober look on Kamen.
"And someone helped him because he has the ability to make friends," Taze said. "That's a weapon as valuable as any blade."
Justin laughed. "No need to lecture, Kamen," he said. "He already has that weapon."
"True."
Taze returned his attention to Justin.
"Kira said you would be much improved this morning. And are you?"
Justin nodded.
"Weak, though. I need to get to a training yard and see how heavy my sword has become."
Another faint smile for that.
"I think your friend would allow us the use of his barn, perhaps. It doesn't seem wise to parade you in public much."
"So no one knows I've survived?"
"No one except the people in this house."
"What about Dells?"
Seeing the question on Taze's face, Justin added, "The man who owns the stables, where I worked."
"Oh, he thinks you're dead," Kamen said. "After we found you here, Donald and I went over there and pretended to be looking for you. We wanted to see if he knew anything about the fight, but he seemed completely at a loss. Worried about you, though."
"I hate to have him thinking I ran off on him, or really am dead," Justin said.
"Perhaps you can swing by and tell him a little of your story before we leave," Taze said. "But as I don't particularly want to engage in a pitched battle with every soldier recruited to the Luminan Convent, especially when my own troops are limited in number, I think we'd better keep your survival a secret for now."
"Before we leave?"
"How long before we head out?"
Justin asked, trying to sound nonchalant.
"So much still undone here. How could he head back to Gosenhall?"
Eleanor was safely out of the convent, but he was far from certain she was willing to leave behind her family, her entire existence, to follow Justin to the royal city. She still didn't even know who he was, not really. There was so much they hadn't discussed, secrets on her side as well as his. Taze was answering the question.
"A few more days, I'd think. You have to be well enough to travel, and I'd like you to be well enough to hold a sword, but that might take longer than we can wait."
"I'll be holding a sword by tomorrow," Justin said. "Whether or not I'll be able to do any damage with it, well, we'll find out then."
"What about Eleanor?" Kamen piped up. "What happens to her?"
Taze was silent. Justin felt his tension go up a notch.
"I don't know," he said to Kamen. "I suppose that depends on what Eleanor wants."
"And if we can give her what she wants," Taze said.
What did that mean?
"I'm going to talk to her this morning," Justin said.
Taze nodded gravely.
"Seneth says she's much stronger today. I'm sure she is most anxious to see you as well."
"You might want a bath first," Kamen suggested,
and different clothes.
Both the riders laughed at that. I don't suppose you can fetch my own clothes from the boarding house, Justin said ruefully.
Our host said you could borrow something from one of his sons, Tay said. But I don't see why Cammon couldn't collect your belongings. That's a good idea.
Cammon was on his feet.
And I'll tell Marnie to send up some water, he said, ducking out the door.
Who's Marnie? Justin asked. Faber's wife?
Yes. We'll have to make sure Baron rewards the two of them most generously for all the assistance they've given you.
If he's rewarding people, he should give Eleanor a hatful of gold. Taze said nothing.
What's happened? Justin asked outright. You don't like her. You haven't said so, but I can tell there's something wrong.
Taze's face grew even more closed.
I think we all owe her a debt too great to repay. But I find myself thinking you wouldn't even have been attacked if you hadn't gone to the convent to see her. She's the reason you drew attention.
Justin was suddenly furious.
And I'd go back tomorrow to see her if that was the only way, he said instantly.
Taze nodded.
That's what worries me.
You can't tell me, you wouldn't tell me, not to see her again.
I wouldn't, Taze said. Save your anger. It is just that if I had to pick one of you to protect, you or Eleanor, I would always choose you. I would rather you fell in love with someone who only put your heart in danger, not your life.
Some of Justin's anger faded.
Well, she's out of the convent now, he said.
Taze nodded.
I wish I could believe that meant she was entirely safe. For you.
Before Justin could answer that, or even demand to know what it meant, the door opened yet again. This time it was an older woman superintending two young men who looked enough like Faber to be his sons. All were laden with large buckets of steaming water. One of them went back out in the hallway and returned with a small metal tub.
"Oh, you do look better,"
the woman greeted Justin, coming over to inspect him. She was middle-aged and brisk, her face lined with kindness. Just the sort of woman he would picture as Faber's wife.
"I'm Marnie, you know. That nice young man said you wanted a bath."
Taze nodded at Marnie and glanced at Justin.
"My signal to leave, I believe," he said. "I'll come back later."
In a moment he was gone. Justin felt some embarrassment at the thought that this woman had probably been the one to strip him out of his own clothes and dress him in this borrowed nightshirt. He didn't have Cammon's easy charm, but he tried a smile and a tone of gratitude.
"It seems I have a lot to thank you for," he said. "You can't have expected all the trouble that's come down in your house. Taking care of me and Eleanor, and now all my friends are here."
Marnie brushed this off as if she was used to turmoil and high drama.
"I'm glad she thought to bring you to us. I think my husband was pleased that you actually trusted him enough to come here. He said he could never entirely read you."
She tilted her head and surveyed him. "You're much bigger than I would have thought when you were just lying there," she said. "Bulky. I think my oldest son's shirts will fit you, though. Not sure about the trousers." That made him laugh.
"Cammon's going to fetch my things from my rented room. I have a couple of changes of clothes."
"Good. Well, here's a towel and some soap. I don't imagine you'll need any help, but if you slip and fall, should I wait outside the door?"
"No, thank you. No."
She grinned and headed for the door, shooing her sons before her.
"Let me know if there's anything you need. You've had breakfast, I see. Come downstairs for your next meal. Then we'll see how you're really doing."
Finally, alone, naked, and stepping into the warm bath. Justin cursed as the heated water burned along every half-open sore. The tub was too small to contain his whole body, so he crouched and splashed as efficiently as possible, working to get loose the dried blood as well as the sweat and grime. A hand across his face made him realize he badly needed a shave.
Would Eleanor recognize him with stubble? But Cammon brought his razor along with his spare clothes. Justin had to tighten his belt a notch to keep his trousers on. Weight loss, muscle loss. It would take him appreciable time to recover from this encounter. A quick shave, a careless comb through the hair, a brief look at himself in the small mirror over the dresser. His face looked paler and rather more angular than usual. The eyes had a certain haunted look. He couldn't imagine how anyone could enjoy a personal inspection in a mirror on a daily basis. Well, maybe someone who looked like Kira.
"Going to see Eleanor?"
Cammon inquired when he was done. Justin gave him a look of exasperation.
"Yes, go away."
"Want me to get Seneth out of the room first?"
Justin paused at the door.
"Yes."
Cammon grinned and brushed by him.
"Give me 5 minutes."
Justin waited for the required time, listening to the sounds down the hallway. Voices drifting up from the first story, clinks and thuds that sounded like someone was rearranging furniture, then the closer noises of Seneth and Cammon talking in the hallway and disappearing down the stairs. Justin took a deep breath, stepped out of his room, down the hall, and into the room next door. Eleanor was standing at the window, her hand resting on the sill, and she gazed down at the streets of Neft, as if fascinated by a pageant of color and motion. Her long hair was unbound down her back and looked half damp, as if she too had taken the time to bathe this morning, to present herself clean and new to the waiting world. The pale design worked into the hair now started around her shoulders. It must have been some time since she had had it renewed by her cousin's hands. She looked so small, so frail. How could she have had the strength to snatch him back from the precipice of death?
"Eleanor," he said.
She started and whirled around. He would never forget the expression her face showed him then. Purest joy at his presence, at his mere existence. She flew across the room and flung herself into his arms, but she was so light she could not overmatch even his precarious balance, and he took her in a hold hard enough to make her gasp.
"Justin, Justin, Justin," she recited. "I thought you were dead. I thought they had killed you. Oh, Justin, I am so glad to see you."
He demonstrated his own corresponding gladness with a kiss that left them both light-headed. Maybe it was the exultation, maybe it was the physical weakness, but when he set her down, they were both unsteady on their feet. They clung to each other as they navigated the floor and collapsed in the big chair that Seneth had been using the night before. Plenty of room for two. Justin merely pulled her onto his lap and held her as tightly as he could. Eleanor's arms were around his neck. She kissed his mouth, his cheeks, his hair, his forehead.
"I'm so glad you're alive," she whispered.
"Only because of you," he whispered back between kisses. "They told me. You saved me. Nobody believed I could survive. You must have magic, after all."
That caught her attention. She leaned back, not too far, and gazed down at him.
"Justin, your friends are here, the mystics. How did they find you? Seneth is the only one I've really talked to, but she's extraordinary. No wonder the Lestra hates mystics if they're all as powerful as she is."
He grinned.
"Well, Seneth's exceptional, but she's the one Coralinda hates most. And they found me because Cammon... Have you met Cammon? He could tell I was in trouble. But I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about you. They said you almost died saving me. Are you truly recovered now? Because if you are, I'm going to shake you until you never, never do that again. Never risk yourself for someone else. Not for me, not for anybody."
She kissed him quickly on the mouth, which he supposed was answer enough.
I've been a healer most of my life, but I never lost so much of myself to someone else, she said seriously. I didn't expect it to happen that way, but I'd do it again if I thought it would save your life. I was so afraid for you. An opening not to be missed. And now you know how I've been feeling this whole time you've been at the convent, he said. Afraid for you, and willing to do anything to save you. Now that you're out...
Oh, I'm not going back, if that's what you're about to ask me, she said. I can't imagine what they think. After I disappeared like that, the same day the soldiers were killed, there would be so many questions. And you know I wanted to leave anyway, so you don't have to worry about me anymore.
But I do, he said. Where will you go next? Tell me your plans.
She was silent a moment. I'm going to write my family, and I'm going to ask Faber, who is the kindest man, if I can stay here till my father or my brothers arrive. They won't be happy that Rosary has been left behind, but once I explain it to them, well, they'll see I had no choice.
You do have a choice, he said in a very low voice. You can come with me to Gosen Hall.
She smiled at him, but he couldn't help feeling the expression was sad. It worried him. Something about this conversation was going to break his heart. Is that where you belong, Gosen Hall?
Time for telling secrets, he said. I'll start. Yes. I belong in the royal city. I'm a king's rider.
The expression on her face didn't change. Wherever she lived, it was some place they had never heard of king's riders.
I'm part of a specially picked, specially trained guard, dedicated to the service of King Baron. I've been in Neff to spy on the Luminan Convent, to try and see if the Lestra is plotting against the king.
And you think she is?
Pretty sure.
Eleanor nodded. Now and then she would say things like, when daughters rule the country of Gilengaria, all this will be changed. I thought she just meant, you know, when the doctrine had spread from the convent to the rest of the kingdom. But I think you're right. She's more ambitious than that. At the moment, he almost didn't care what plans Coralinda Gieseltes was making.
I have to go back to Gosen Hall with the others, he said. Will you come with me? I never thought I was the kind of man who would marry, but I...
She stopped him, with a finger on his mouth and that sad smile on her own. For a moment, he thought she might start crying. I can't, she said. I can't marry anyone my family does not approve of, and they will never approve of you. He pulled his head back, and her hand fell to her lap.
They will. The king himself will vouch for me. And if it's a dower gift they want, well, I don't have much saved, but I know I can acquire enough gold.
Justin, no. Not money, no. It's just my family. They don't allow... Women never marry outside the Sabbata Rhys. The phrase was vaguely familiar. Had Senneth used it once? But he said...
What's that? I don't know that word.
I come from the Lirans, she whispered. The land across the mountains. Maybe you don't know much about our customs. Nobody in Gilengaria seems to, but women never marry where the families do not approve. If they try...
Their fathers and brothers come and duel with that man to the death, Justin said grimly. Senneth told that story once. I had no reason to pay attention, but that stuck in my mind. I remember thinking, no one would fight me to my death. I could win any woman I wanted.
She put her hands on his cheeks. Now her tears were overflowing, but she kept talking, as if she didn't even notice them. But you couldn't, Justin, don't you see? I love you. But I could not bear it if you killed Torin or Hayden or my father. I couldn't bear it. I would give you up before I saw them murdered at your hands. He shook his head, carefully enough, so that he did not dislodge her fingers.
They wouldn't be. Eleanor, I'm good enough not to kill someone, even if he's trying to kill me. I could disable your father or your brother. I could win the fight and walk away.